And hello out there. Safety words for Tuesday, March 24th, 2025. I'm sorry, 2026. Where's my mind go? Oh, I know. I was writing a whole bunch of reports today that said 2025. A lot going on, a lot in store for you. I don't know, do we call it Safety FM listeners, Safety FMers? Good question there. I'm going to start out real quick here, right? And I had mentioned this back in October, right? It was the last baseball game of the year for my son, and it was the same day as the No Kings rally in October, where they had 7 million people showing up. And I'm going to share with you the message I said. I'm going to say it again today, and it's even more critical today than it was back in October here. So this is off of Axios.com, a story by Carrie Shepherd. More than 3,000 No Kings protests set for this Saturday. Organizers across the U.S. are planning more than 3,000 local events Saturday for No Kings Day of Nonviolent Action. The big picture, progressive political groups, labor unions, human and civil rights organizations expect Saturday's nationwide demonstrations to surpass last year's No Kings rallies in June and October. And I imagine it would be because we are in the election season, all right? I think there's a perpetual election season out there now. And it mentions Minneapolis, Twin Cities, blah, 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 you know, and all the stuff going on down there. Now, I'll share with you again. January 6th, right? That fateful day back in 2021 on the Capitol, I got a whole bunch of phone calls from people. And one of them was, hey, are you going to go down to Washington? Because he was an old political friend. I said, look, I don't know. I said, the answer is no, and I suggest you go down there because these people are going to cause problems. There's going to be a problem, and me and you, with the most to lose, are probably going to be the ones who they're going to go after. And sure enough, you know, people who didn't have anything to do with that thing going on January 6th, even on video, people were convicted of stuff. That the one guy was he videoed himself the whole time. He was nowhere near anything, and they didn't want to hear it. They being the prosecutors, federal prosecutors. Now, here we are in a similar situation here at with us, No Kings. We've had protesters roughed up. We've had protesters killed under, right? And someone said, well, if you don't cause a problem, you're not going to get killed, blah, blah, blah. You're not going to get hurt. Baloney. What about the person next to you? What about the people you're with? And everything else that goes on at these things. You got to think about that. So my suggestion is this. If you go and you're inclined to go, right, I don't go to public protests anymore. Haven't done it in many, many years. And things start to go south. Things start to turn bad. There's maybe an agent provocateur in there like there was on January 6th. There you had agent provocateurs. Now this is not made up. This is actually true. Causing problems or whatever. Get the hell out. Right? You can protest, be peaceful, but the minute that starts to not be peaceful, leave. Get out. Absolutely nonviolent. I don't want to see or hear about any of our listeners out there going out there and having a problem. And that's the moral of the story. It's not the leaders of these movements that are paying the price. It's Joe and Jane Smith out there. Right out there thinking, oh, yeah, we're going to go, we're doing something, we got to take part in our civic duty, blah, blah, blah. That's wonderful. However, they're the ones who are going to be paying the price, not the leaders of the movement. Not the leaders back there in their nice silk suits and business suits driving around those Mercedes. Doesn't matter whether you're right wing or left wing. This is what the leaders do. Or if you really want to make believe that you're in charge, what you do is you tell the guys, they used to tell them on the political campaigns, get your khaki, you know, your tan khaki pants and your navy blue blazer, and here, we're going to give you a little thing for your ear to put in, right, a little transmitter, and you're going to look like you're in charge of something. Look at that, and you're like, oh, yeah, look at me, I'm in charge. And just your grins and giggles, you can get them a whistle, too. These are the folks, all right, I don't know what to tell you. The most important thing for you and your family is for nothing to happen to you or your family. Stay alive. Things start to get right, get out. Right? Now, first of all, if you want to go, go. But be very careful. That's what my message is tonight. With that, we're going to go over a feature story news here. Hold on. Come on, where are it? Feature story news here, and we'll go from there, and then we'll do our intro.
From Feature Story News in Washington, I'm Tony Waterman. The White House says plans for talks with Iran remain fluid and that any speculation should not be deemed as final. It follows reports that Vice President J.D. Vance could meet Iranian officials in Pakistan for talks this week. Tehran has denied President Donald Trump's suggestion that talks to end the conflict were held over the weekend. Defense analyst Colonel Simon Diggins says discussions are likely to be taking place between various parties about possible next steps.
I suspect those kind of third-party talks through countries who have been part of the conversations in the past. I'm talking about people like Qatar and Oman, even though very angry with Iran at the attacks on their soil. I think what really happened is that both Trump and Iran blinked. The kind of threats and counter threats that happened over the weekend both realized that they would be taking themselves into a very different and escalatory phase.
The Philippines on Tuesday declared a national energy emergency. The president saying the war in Iran is threatening the country's oil supplies. Officials say they have about 45 days of fuel in reserves, and while the Strait of Hormuz remains closed to most vessels, some are being allowed passage. More than half a dozen Indian Navy ships are reportedly escorting Indian vessels out of the strategic waterway. FSN's Ishan Garg tells us more from New Delhi.
It's unclear where Indian warships are positioned, but they are reportedly closely tracking movement of Indian merchant ships through the conflict-ridden region. Indian officials have yet to comment on the specific mission of the Indian Navy, but they say Indian forces are routinely deployed in the Arabian Sea for various reasons. After Iran allowed safe passage to two Indian tankers last week, two more such tankers carrying cooking gas are making their way to Indian ports, as per data from private trading companies.
U.S. Senator Mark Wayne Mullen is being sworn in as the next Secretary of the Department of Homeland Security. He replaces Kristi Noem, whose controversial time in charge saw federal agents deployed to multiple cities, leading to the fatal shootings of two U.S. citizens in Minnesota in January. FSN's Nick Harper reports from Washington.
The Oklahoma senator takes over the department at a difficult time. It's still facing a weeks-long funding standoff, with Democrats and Republicans unable to find a compromise deal that would fully fund the National Security Agency. Mark Wayne Mullen will immediately oversee the airport workers who've gone for weeks without pay and have to navigate the current deployment of ICE agents to more than a dozen US airports, there to try and alleviate the long passenger lines created by the funding shortfall. And he takes over immigration enforcement.
From bureaus worldwide, this is FSN.
With FSN Spotlight, I'm Simon Marks, looking in more detail today at a shocking anti-Semitic attack in London on ambulances operated by a Jewish charity. Hatzola provides emergency transport for anyone who needs it in North London, regardless of their faith. On Sunday night, four of the charity's ambulances were destroyed in an arson attack that has been claimed by an Iranian terror group. Police are now investigating that claim. Danny Cohen is a former senior executive at the BBC, who writes on anti-Semitism in Britain.
There is a whiff of the 1930s, I think, to what many Jewish people feel they're experiencing at the moment. Violent intimidation, harassment, all of those things making Jewish people feel that this is a time they've not really experienced. I feel this too, in my lifetime, the conditions that British Jews are finding themselves in right now. And it's leading British Jews to have, should I take down my Judaism from my front door? Where will my children be safe going to school? Do we need an escape plan? If things are Jews here, where would we go and what would we do? And it's really deeply concerning that is happening in our society.
Shocking as Sunday night's attack undoubtedly was, by the end of Monday, the charity operating the ambulances had received more than £1 million in donations from people all over the UK.
And a recap of today's headlines. The White House says plans for talks with Iran remain fluid and that any speculation should not be deemed as final. The Philippines has declared a national energy emergency, the president saying the war in Iran is threatening the country's oil supplies. U.S. Senator Mark Wayne Mullen is being sworn in as the next secretary of the Department of Homeland Security. That's Feature Story News, Tony Waterman reporting.
Yep, that's Feature Story News. Now let's do our intro here.
Hi, this is Jim from Safety Wars. Before we start the program, I want to make sure everyone understands that we often talk about OSHA and EPA citations, along with some other regulatory actions from other agencies, legal cases, and criminal activity. Everyone is innocent until proven guilty in a court of law. Proposed fines are exactly that, and they are often litigated, reduced, or vacated. We use available public records, news accounts, and press releases. We cannot warranty or guarantee the details of any of the stories we share, since we are not directly involved with these stories, at least not most of the time. Enjoy the show.
This show is brought to you by Safety FM.
Hello, 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 we're back. I wanted to get that out of the way, this whole thing with the No Kings rally. Here, and again, that was one of our biggest viewed comments out there. I think it might be our highest viewed episode with that back in October, you know, where we 3-minute little ditty on a Saturday morning. Again, reason why I said I have direct experience with this crap. Please be careful. Be careful. So yesterday, on my last project, I drove by LaGuardia Airport all the time. Almost every day, and people realize the size of that airport is, my opinion at least, doesn't look like that big. And to hear about the plane crash there, messed up here. They're still trying to figure out what the hell went on here. The NTSB on Tuesday released new details of its investigation to Sunday's deadly collision. As the runway where the crash happened remains closed, right? So this was from yesterday here. So sources said the plane, which originated in Montreal with 72 passengers and 4 crew members on board, was going about 100 miles an hour at the time of impact. I mean, it was moving down that runway. I would suggest everybody go and take a look at the video there. NTSB investigator Doug Brazy gave a breakdown Tuesday, the final 3-plus minutes. And again, we're going to have some accident reports we're going to be discussing here, and that their timeline is critical. One of the things that we have, one of the things that every accident report has, where you have to go into depth, I'm not talking about a little boo-boo, that goes into the little book of boo-boos. We're talking where people get seriously hurt, you know there's going to be litigation and everything, always starts with a timeline on that, and oftentimes people don't want to cooperate with that, but when you see these government reports, government accidents reports, they're always going to have that. So NTSB Chair Jennifer Hammondi revealed that at the time of the collision, there were people on duty in the LaGuardia Tower, adding that information is preliminary in many interviews. So things came out. Basically, the usual, overwork, right? From a hop point of view, the system hit capacity. And the system was...
You got into the safety business because you wanted to protect people. But somewhere along the way, the job started controlling your time, your schedule, your priorities, even your income potential. What if the expertise you've built over the years in the field can give you something more? More freedom, more control, more ownership of your future. I'm Sheldon Primus, the author of 7 Steps to Starting a Profitable Safety Consulting Business and the host of the Safety Consultant Podcast. With more than 350 episodes helping safety professionals become consultants and grow their career. Consulting changed my life. In fact, I'm a full-time RVer and one consulting contract paid for my home I live in today. Now, I help safety professionals build their own consulting practice through bi-weekly coaching calls, accountability, and personal guidance. But this program isn't for everyone. Start with the consultant readiness audit at sheldon.coach.
What if everything we thought we knew about safety was just interference? From the host of the Rated R Safety Show and the founder of Safety FM comes the complete Signal Transmission Trilogy, now available in one powerful edition. Safety, in my opinion, the book that started the conversation. Safety Mutation, where the boundaries of culture, systems, and belief begin to break. And now, Safety Transmission, the final piece of the Signal. For the first time, all 3 books are together in one volume. The Signal Transmission Trilogy, complete edition. This isn't just about compliance. It's about consciousness. It's about decoding the way we think, lead, and live, inside and outside the system. Whether you've been following the Signal since the beginning or you're just now tuning in, this is the version to own. Search Signal Trilogy on Amazon or visit safetyfm.com to get your copy now.
The human beings involved here with this. NTSB Chair Jennifer Hamley says the fire truck that was struck also lacked the transponder limiting data available to controllers. Federal investigators say they have uncovered conflicting information in the LaGuardia Airport control tower logs. Still, I don't know who was handling ground control duties in the moments before the deadly runway collision late Sunday. During a briefing Tuesday, NTSB Chair Jennifer Hamley said investigators were working to resolve the inconsistencies in tower records, including discrepancies in dates and times. That's that all-important timeline we just mentioned. We do have logs, but there's also conflicting information, including dates and times on the logs. I'm hearing some background music here. I don't know if you're hearing it. Weird here. Not for me. Investigators said it remains unclear who was performing the ground control role, responsible for managing aircraft and vehicle movement on taxiways, with conflicting accounts pointing to either the controller in charge or the local controller. So they're going to get into this, right, with the NTSB and everything else with that. We have also here... this is going to drive me nuts here. They'll throw me off the air if I have this music, but that's okay. Minnesota fire that killed NHL reporter and her 3 children did not believe to be intentional, officials said. Right? So a deadly house fire in Minnesota that claimed the lives of an NHL reporter and her 3 children over the weekend does not appear to have been intentional, officials said on Monday. The White Bear leg... Lake Fire Department released a statement Monday following the Saturday morning fire that claimed the life of 37 Minnesota Wild correspondent Jessie Pierce and her three children. Tragedy here. They don't think that was said intentionally. Thank God. LaGuardia plane crash files identified as investigators scrutinized the black box here, and two of them, Mackenzie Gunther and Antoine Forrest, and they're looking at the voice recorder. Let's remember, everyone is innocent until proven guilty. Here, we don't know the whole context, and there were some reports saying that someone on the someone on the audio says, "Oh, I messed up." Well, guess what? That's a human reaction after something that happened, because you're thinking, well, what could I have done to prevent this? And there is guilt associated with that. That guilt may or may not be appropriate. Will it be their fault? May or may not be their fault, but let's remember, blame fixes nothing. All right. Oh, that was my phone. Blame fixes nothing. Oh, yeah, because this is where it starts to get uncomfortable for a lot of accident investigators out there, especially if you have the internal ones. It's your fault? Okay, that's the report. Okay, all done. And it circumvents all of the context that is going on there, all the systems that failed, everything else that's going on. Well, hey, Frank took the blame for it. No need to investigate anymore. And that's why it's important you go through the whole thing. Well, okay, maybe Frank was left holding the 10-pound bag of Gouvenau, 10 pounds of Gouvenau in a 5-gallon bag, 5-pound bag, as we say. But Frank might not have been the problem here, right? And I'm using the fictitious name Frank, and if you know that, right? So you go through the whole thing. I mean, I've been involved in a couple at the beginning of my career when I was first learning the craft where, you would think, well, this is what caused it, the immediate thing. But no, it was a lot that went into that. I use a case study from one of my accident investigations where someone got splashed with chemicals in the face, wasn't wearing goggles. And what were they saying? Well, he got splashed in the face because he wasn't wearing goggles. Yeah, okay, if he had goggles on, that would have been the last final thing in this whole long process that we investigated, and there were like multiple failures, one of them being that chemical was not supposed to be in that piece of equipment. And he was told to put it in that piece of equipment and trained to put it in that piece of equipment, and it blew out hoses. Hosing them down, and now we get into counterfactual. That was one of the root causes, where wrong material, wrong liquid, and the wrong kind of piece of equipment, ruptured hoses. And it turned out to be a lot more than that, including he was a new employee, right? He was a new employee and was working with a senior-level manager at the company who, we'll just say, he was a nice guy and everything, I'm sure, but at work he was 100% business and a little bit antagonistic at times, everybody admitted. Here we have another one. Last seconds reveal cockpit handoff before aircraft struck fire truck. Control of the aircraft involved in the LaGuardia crash was transferred from the first officer to the captain just seconds before the collision, according to federal investigators. So was it the pilot's fault? I don't know with that. But this is a piece of the puzzle. A lot of things went into this. Aviation accident investigator Doug Vrazy provided reporters on Tuesday afternoon with analysis of the three final minutes the Air Canada jet that crashed into a fire at LaGuardia Airport. With just 9 seconds until impact, Vrazy said the tower instructed the fire truck, identified as truck one, to stop, and then at 8 seconds there was a sound consistent with the airplane's landing gear touching down on the runway. At 6 seconds, there was a pilot transfer of controls from one pilot to the other, adding that at four seconds, the tower instructed truck one to stop. And that's what you hear, stop, 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 stop. At 0 seconds, the recording ended. The NTSB chair later confirmed that the first officer had been flying the aircraft before handing control over to the captain in the final moments. Investigators have not said why control was transferred or whether it was related to the presence of the vehicle on the runway as they continue to work to determine what happened. I don't know if we ever find out what happened. Again, conflicting information. Here we have a whole bunch of stories here. Now, here's the other thing here with this. Reportedly, here we have from Mediaite, investigators sent to deadly LaGuardia crash was stuck on the TSA line for 3 hours. NTSB had to beg to let her through. The long TSA security lines at the airports are not just a hassle for travelers. They held up an investigator going to the scene of a deadly runway crash for hours until NTSB intervened. According to what I remember, right, with this stuff, the NTS, none of the security stuff matters if you're a first responder with this, especially in New York. So I don't know if that person is listed as a first responder or not. Definitely an axe investigator. And if she's high enough up on the food chain, what the hell are they doing? You know, where was she? Standing online with all of us other people out there? Oh, yeah, I'm here to investigate the accident. Blah, blah, blah. There's my idea. Oh, well, let's keep her on the line. That's what it sounds like. I don't know if that's the way it was or not, but, you know. So, here we go. Hold on. We have an ad here. They have some audio here. And it goes into earlier Monday, NTSB held a press conference. According to the NTSB, investigators began around 3:10, but some were still en route at the time of the press conference. And they had not had a full day investigation. A lot of questions, and really bursting at the we have a DHS and shutdown. We have long TSA lines. Our air traffic control specialist was in line with the TSA for 3 hours until we called in Houston to beg, see if we could get her through so we could get her in here. So being a really big challenge to get the entire team here and still arriving as we speak. My question is this. Is this a case of malicious compliance? Here is, I have a sound clip specialist, key here. Investigator on this is off of courtesy of CNN.
Time when we're seeing just chaos in airports around the country.
This is kind of symptomatic of an aviation system that's really bursting at the seams. And while the TSA issues and the lack of funding for TSA workers is not necessarily connected, we know that it's already having an impact on aviation as a whole. I was on a commercial flight yesterday. There are plenty of people who missed their flights, what was supposed to be a full flight, because they simply could not get through security at Houston. And we know that it's impacted the NTSB's work here, and we heard from NTSB Chair Hammadi saying that she had to beg to get their air traffic control specialist, key investigator on this, by the way. ATC is going to be a huge through line in this investigation to get her through security after she was waiting there for 3 hours. And then you have to also consider the fact that there was a collision on the ground involving two planes at LaGuardia taxiing back on October 1st. There was the mid-air collision at Reagan National Airport back last January 29, 2025, when 67 people were killed. And this new reporting that we have coming out of anonymous reports by pilots essentially sounding the warning call, saying that they felt like LaGuardia was so crowded, so at capacity, they thought it could be the next DCA. They thought it could be the next collision at Reagan National Airport. So there's some really, really key telltales here. And I have to tell you, I've been covering near collisions for years here at CNN. And it was very interesting that we were reporting on collisions that did not happen. Now we're reporting on collisions that are happening. It's a very bad trend.
Chris, I mean, do you think there's something about LaGuardia or just this is just a problem?
That's Anderson Cooper asking
the
questions.
The national airspace system as a whole is under stress. I mean, we look at our last government shutdown that actually did affect air traffic. It was 2 months or a month, a little over a month, where air traffic controllers weren't receiving any money. A lot of the controllers decided to quit. It was the largest number of controllers that were quitting per day. I think Sean Duffy had even said 15 to 20 per day over the normal 2 to 3. When I first got in to become an air traffic controller, they were at their lowest staffing levels then, and they've just never improved. So it's a serious issue that needs to be addressed. They are under stress, and they are working 6 days a week. week.
Stress levels.
10-hour days, yeah. So it's a problem, and it needs to get addressed.
Chris Golan, appreciate it. Pete Montine as well. Thank you.
Yeah, so, you know, it's one of those things out there. You're stressing the system. People aren't getting paid or anything else. Does that have to do anything with the crash? I have no idea. We have one transport consultant, Michael Alcuvacho, suggests that Sunday's solo plane crash of LaGuardia could be attributed to gradual decline in the U.S. aviation system, as pointed out by the current administration. I'm not going to be their apologist, but this had been talked about from last January's accident, not this past January 2025's accident over there in Reagan National. I mean, I don't know with that. Let's take our, it's 28 minutes after the hour. Let's take our first break here, and we'll go from there.
Have you listened or watched the Safety War Show? It does stream live on the radio and on the streamer emers that we have. So if you have not taken a listen to Jim Bozell and what the hell he's doing every evening with Safety Wars, I would strongly encourage you to take a view or take a listen, whichever option is available for you, and take a listen to what the hell he has going on. It's definitely, it will take some deep dives and some information that you might be interested in.
Is your safety training old, stale, and hackneyed? Is your safety trainer still preaching a warped version of behavior-based safety? How about safety training that is designed to actually address and assess your hazards and liabilities and is not standardized baloney from generations ago? Contact the Safety Wars team at safetywars.com or call me, Jim Polzel, at 845-269-5772. Remember, if you are receiving this message, you are the solution to unsafe workplaces.
OSHA recordables, catastrophic losses, environmental disasters. You want answers? So do I. This is Jim Polzel with Safety Wars.
That's my daddy.
Okay, we are back here. Hold on, here.
From the front lines of the safety war, it's Safety Wars with your host, Jim Polzel on Safety FM. Get ready to face the harsh reality.
Yes, it is the harsh reality. Here we have another one here with this. Fire at Valero Refinery in Port Arthur extinguished. That's Port Arthur, Louisiana, right? After shelter in place lifted, this is from early this morning, late last night. An explosion, large flume of smoke at the Valero Refinery in Port Arthur prompted officials to order West Side residents to shelter in place Monday. But the major fire was out by early Tuesday, and the shelter in place order was lifted. Jefferson County Judge Jeff Brandnick announced. Now, here's what I want you to pay attention to here, real quick. Air monitoring by Valero, the Port Arthur Fire Department, and TCEQ shows no concerns for air quality, according to the news release from Valero. As of 3:28 a.m., the major fire at Valero was out, Brannick said, adding that air monitoring performed by Valero, the EPA, and Texas Commission on Environmental Quality, and others, did not indicate exceedances of safe thresholds at this point. All right. Okay, so, three questions. And a former friend of the program, Ian Punnett, rest in peace, heard this, and he's, I got to get this guy on the air. And that's when I was on Coast to Coast. Question number one. You always ask these people doing the air monitoring and giving you statements on this. Is the air, and it has to be in this order, is the air safe? All right? Then the next question is going to be, how are you making that determination that the air is safe? Are you using like a government standard or something like that? Then the third one is going to be the clincher. Did you actually run air samples or do air monitoring? In my experience, they're really confident with the first two questions. Third one, not so confident. And that's how you put people on the spot. If you're in the member of the public, if you're a reporter, you ask those three questions. Because oftentimes they will fail on that third question. And guess what? If they don't fail on it, now you have a complete picture. Yeah. It's safe. Yes, they're comparing it to some kind of standard. And number three, yes, they actually did the air monitoring. Because oftentimes, they don't do the air monitoring. I'm just telling you the way it is. With that, remember, 9/11, they didn't have sample results out there until it happened on a Tuesday. They didn't have stuff going on until the following Sunday. Saturday or Sunday. Now you're going to say, well, you know, what's going on here? Okay. All right. Where are we going here? War news. No, we're just going to go right on over to government news on here. So, not a lot of press releases today. How many minutes are we after the hour? 33 minutes after the hour. This is from OSHA. The Department of Labor. U.S. Department of Labor launches Make America AI Ready initiative. I thought we were getting rid of the Make America logos. Right? The U.S. Department of Labor today announced the launch of Make America AI Ready, a free artificial intelligence literacy course that will help American workers and learn the basics of AI by simply texting READY, R-E-A-D-Y, to 202-02-02. The initiative advances Trump's administration's commitment to equip American workers with foundational AI skills needed to succeed in an AI-driven economy, as outlined in America's Talent Strategy and the White House's AI Action Plan. The course is uniquely designed to deliver bite-sized learning content and daily challenges to users entirely over text message. Now, what we're finding, I was involved in a AI discussion this afternoon with a bunch of safety professionals and how it was being impacted, how it was impacting the industry here, and a very, very interesting discussion here. We all came to the conclusion that you got to know what the hell you're asking, and you got to have a pretty good idea of what the answer is going to be. And AI being used as a tool is a good thing. Relying on AI for information and worshiping the AI and relying on it as an ex cathedra document or inquiry, not such a good thing. Again, appropriate use. You got to use your noggin, use your brain with this. So the course that they're promoting here, the course is uniquely designed to deliver bite-sized learning content and daily challenges to users entirely over text message. Users can complete the course in 7 days by engaging for just 10 minutes a day. The text message based design is intended to be accessible to all Americans, including those without a laptop or limited access. So it was developed through a private-public partnership between the Department of Labor and education technology company Artiste. Right, and a participant in the White House's Pledge to America's Youth to help advance AI education across the country. Right, so check that out here. Nothing else from the Department of Labor today. Let's go on over to the CSB. U.S. Chemical Safety Board commends AFPM for voluntary action to review refinery safety. This is from March 23rd, which was yesterday. And let's see what we got. The U.S. Chemical Safety and Hazard Board today issued a safety spotlight recognizing the American Fuel and Petrochemical Manufacturers Association, American Fuel and Petrochemical Manufacturers, for the organization's leadership in chemical safety. AFPM voluntarily implemented a key CSB safety recommendation, stemming from the agency's investigation into the 2018 explosion and fire at the Husky Energy Refinery in Superior, Wisconsin, that was directed to another organization. The incident at the Husky Refinery injured 36 workers and caused $550 million in damage. It occurred during a shutdown of the refinery's fluid catalytic cracking unit, FCC unit, it's amazing to me that every organization has a different name for that, right? When a flammable mixture of hydrocarbons and air ignited due to failed safeguards, one of CSV's recommendations from the investigation called on the American Petroleum Institute, API, to develop safety guidance for FCCs. While not the intended recipient, AFPM took independent action, launching a comprehensive FCC safety initiative that included 18 in-person safety workshops, reaching over 700 participants from 76 refineries in the U.S. and Canada, a publicly available FCC process safety webpage with resources such as checklists, bulletins, and guidance incorporating lessons from both the Husky and ExxonMobil Torrance refinery incidents. The CSV determined that these actions by AFPM fulfilled the CSV's recommendation, even though AFPM had done them instead of API. My impression is that there's always been a little...
You got into the safety business because you wanted to protect people, but somewhere along the way, the job started controlling your time, your schedule, your priorities, even your income potential. What if the expertise you've built over the years in the field can give you something more? More freedom, more control, more ownership of your future. I'm Sheldon Primus, the author of 7 Steps to Starting a Profitable Safety Consulting Business and the host of the Safety Consultant Podcast. With more than 350 episodes helping safety professionals become consultants and grow their career. Consulting changed my life. In fact, I'm a full-time RVer and one consulting contract paid for my home I live in today. Now, I help safety professionals build their own consulting practice through bi-weekly coaching calls, accountability, and personal guidance. But this program isn't for everyone. Start with the consultant readiness audit at sheldon.coach.
What if everything we thought we knew about safety was just interference? From the host of the Rated R Safety Show and the founder of Safety FM comes the complete Signal Transmission Trilogy, now available in one powerful edition. Safety, in my opinion, the book that started the conversation. Safety Mutation, where the boundaries of culture, systems, and belief begin to break. And now, Safety Transmission, the final piece of the Signal. For the first time, all 3 books are together in one volume. The Signal Transmission Trilogy, complete edition. This isn't just about compliance. It's about consciousness. It's about decoding the way we think, lead, and live inside and outside the system. Whether you've been following the Signal since the beginning or you're just now tuning in, this is the version to own. Search Signal Trilogy on Amazon or visit safetyfm.com to get your copy now.
Bit of friendly competition there between API and AFPM. I might be wrong on that, but I don't think so. The CSV said this is a clear example of industry safety leadership in action. It goes on and on and on. Check them out. But that's probably worth. Let's click on the safety spotlight here. Let's see what we get. Right. So what? Yeah, they have a whole bunch of things here. Let's see if we have something that would be relevant to us. Description of typical FCC unit hazards. Right. At a minimum, the document should be applicable to both new and existing units. Description of FCC unit hazards. Okay. Including air leaks into hydrocarbon systems and hydrocarbon leaks into air systems that could form a flammable mixture during transient operation. If needed, include differences. Recommended practices for safeguards to control unit hazards. Okay, good. Right, once safeguards are not relying on people. Recommended monitoring for process safety during the unit transient operations. recommended emergency operating procedures, PHA guidance for key FCC specific scenarios, including transient operation, right? Process hazard analysis, that is. Recommended FCC specific field and board operator process safety training topics, guidelines for process safety assessments, and incorporate lessons learned from other things, right? So, okay, that's good. I mean, they're doing a good thing here with that. And that's what we like to see is organizations not being told what to do, right? Where they take the bull by the horns, so to speak. This was from last month, today, February 26th. The CSV, U.S. Chemical Safety and Hazard Investigation Board, CSV, released its final investigation into the July 2023 explosions, fires, and toxic ethylene oxide release at the Dow Chemical Company's Dow Louisiana Operations Glycol 2 plant in Plaquemine. I guess. So, a series of explosions on the plant caused significant damage to nearby process equipment and resulting in the release of more than 31,000 pounds of toxic ethylene oxide, which was produced out at the facility. I've worked with this stuff before right? ETO is a reactive and flammable chemical product. It's a known human carcinogen, meaning it causes cancer. Local authorities issued a shelter-in-place order affecting hundreds of nearby residents. The CSV determined that the incident began when the ETO inadvertently entered pressure relief piping that contained air. The mixture ignited and propagated through approximately 50 feet of piping to a pressure relief valve. When the valve lifted due to an increased pressure, the flame traveled into the vapor space. A reflex drum containing both liquid and vapor, ethylene oxide. Vapor, ethylene oxide heated and decomposed, causing pressure to rise until the drum catastrophically failed, meaning it exploded, releasing its toxic contents here. So, again, something to check out here. All right. Here we have one, right? Trump's Transportation Secretary, Sean P. Duffy, and Federal Aviation Administration announced new measure to enhance safety between airplanes and helicopters. This is from last Wednesday. U.S. Transportation Secretary Sean Duffy and FAA Administrator Brian Bedford today announced a new measure to enhance safety in areas where helicopters often cross both arrival and departure paths near busy airports. The General Notice, GENOT, suspends the use of visual separation between airplanes and helicopters, now mandates that air traffic controllers will instead use radar to actively manage these aircraft to keep them separated at specific lateral and vertical distances. So basically they were eyeballing this, is what I take it. This upgraded safety protocol is based on a year-long review by the FAA's safety team that used innovative tools to review cross-traffic data and review incident reports. This is from Sean Duffy. Quote, "The tragedy over the Potomac 1 year ago revealed a startling truth. Years of warning signs were missed. The FAA needed dire reform. Since then, we've implemented numerous changes to protect the skies over our capital and keep the traveling public safe. But the job isn't done. Using innovative data analysis, the safety team at the FAA has identified the need for enhanced protocols at all airports across the national airspace system. The Trump administration will continue to act decisively to keep you and your family safe." Right? And they mentioned, why is the FAA taking action? Because of a couple of incidents lately. And they give you a whole timeline on things here. So, again, overstressed system, you're going to have a problem. Here we have the CDC news releases here. CDC warns of E. coli outbreak linked to raw cheddar cheese. Let's learn more. A CDC safety alert regarding multi-state outbreak of E. coli infections has been posted right on the CDC website. The key points: CDC, FDA, public health officials in three states, California, Florida, and Texas, are investigating the multi-state outbreak of E. coli infections linked to raw cheddar cheese sold by Raw Farm. Seven people infected with the outbreak strain of E. coli have been reported from these three states. Two people have been hospitalized. No deaths have been reported. While the investigation is ongoing, if you have any of these affected cheeses in your home, consider not eating them. Consider, how about you don't eat them? Right? Over half the illnesses are in children under the age of five. What people should do? You have any of these cheeses in your home, consider not eating them. I'm reading what the press release says. Call your healthcare provider right away if you have any severe E. coli symptoms. Consider washing surfaces and containers that may have touched these cheeses using hot soapy water or a dishwasher. E. coli symptoms. Most people infected with Shiga toxin, producing E. coli, it should be a comma there. Right, some of this stuff is obviously written by AI. Producing E. coli, comma, not E. coli experience, E. coli, comma, experience severe stomach cramps, diarrhea, often bloody, and vomiting. Symptoms usually start 3 to 4 days after swallowing the bacteria. Most people recover without treatment after 5 to 7 days, and it could cause kidney damage. Clues that someone is developing HUS, which causes kidney damage, include decreased frequency of urination, feeling tired, and losing pink color in cheeks and inside lower eyelids. For more information about E. coli, see the about Escherichia coli infection. I cannot pronounce that. I'm not even going to, right? The Centers for Disease Control continues free health screenings for coal miners and announces its 2026 dates. NIOSH, National Institute for Occupational Safety and Health, a part of the CDC, will kick off the agency's annual mobile health screenings for coal miners this month. The federal program, in its 21st year, provides free confidential screenings that support early detection of black lung disease, a serious but preventable condition caused by breathing coal mine dust. This year's screenings will run from March through May in communities throughout West Virginia, Virginia, Alabama, Kentucky, Ohio, and Indiana. They have a mobile testing unit, and they'll take, answer their questions, they'll run through some tests, and go from there. Screenings are approximately 30 minutes and are confidential by law. Right. Each miner will see the results in approximately 12 weeks, and appointments are recommended. So check that out on the CDC website. CDC.gov on there. This is from March 9th. The CDC today reaffirmed its commitment to protecting communities across the U.S. as it works closely with the South Carolina Department of Public Health and the new North Carolina Department of Health and Human Services to contain and prevent measles outbreaks. At South Carolina's request, CDC disease detectives from the agency's Epidemic Intelligence Service, EIS, are supporting on-the-ground response activities. They will also analyze outbreak data from both South Carolina and North Carolina in partnership with state and local officials. Their specialized expertise in epidemiology and outbreak investigation will help identify transmission patterns, strengthen containment strategies, and guide targeted vaccination and prevention efforts to protect communities. That gives a whole list of things here, right? Again, measles. There are several outbreaks across the country, and apparently right now there was a whole, outside of San Francisco, there was a whole high school, of all places, where TB was going around. Tuberculosis. With that. All right. And I think we mentioned all of this in previous episodes the rest here. We're going to head on over to EPA. We have a couple of minutes left here. Let's see what's going on over there. EPA expedites review of requests from New Hampshire under the Clean Air Act. It's from yesterday. In accordance with the U.S. EPA, Administrator Lee Zeldin's commitment to cooperative federalism, EPA is expeditiously working to review the state of New Hampshire's two Clean Air Acts of emissions, seeking to repeal the state's vehicle inspection and maintenance program to remove the state from the ozone transportation reason, OTR, ahead of the typical 18-month timeline. In June 2025, New Hampshire Governor Kelly Ayotte signed a law repealing the state's vehicle emissions program, including the emissions testing program, in its entirety. I didn't know that you could do that. In September 2025, New Hampshire asked the EPA to approve a change to its state implementation plan, SIP, that would remove the state's vehicle inspection maintenance program. Currently, New Hampshire is part of the ozone transport region, a group of northeastern states required to include ozone reduction measures in their SIPs, even if they've already met federal ozone standards. Because of this, New Hampshire's SIP includes the IM program. Under the Clean Air Act, the state must get approval before implementing its June 2025 law to end the program. To do that, New Hampshire must first be removed from the ozone transportation region. EPA has up to 18 months to decide on state petitions under the CAA, but after receiving New Hampshire's petitions in December 24th, 2025, Christmas Eve, the agency plans to move much faster. Merry Christmas. The EPA expects to share its proposed decision by early December and issue a final decision before the end of the year, well ahead of schedule, right? So they're looking to speed things up there. Here's the one with some international intrigue here. EPA determines Phoenix Mesa area will not be unfairly punished for international emissions, right? Agency finalized use of Clean Air Act international transfer provision to prevent Phoenix Mesa from a higher non-attainment determination. In other words, they're not going to get blamed for other people's problem, namely Mexico. So Phoenix, the US EPA finalized its determination to not reclassify the Phoenix Mesa area from moderate to serious non-attainment under the 2015 Ozone National Ambient Air Quality Standards. Citing Section 179B of the Clean Air Act, EPA finds the Phoenix Mesa area would have met federal ozone air quality standards by its August 3rd, 2024 deadline had it not been from emissions coming to the area from outside the United States. The agency's decision will ensure that the manufacturers and citizens are not punished for emissions out of their control. Or do they say where they are from? I suspect. Right? Prior to EPA Administrators Lee Zeldin's leadership, I swear he's going for higher office here. States had an unnecessarily difficult time demonstrating that foreign air pollution harmed Americans within their borders and their ability to achieve attainment because of unworkable guidance. Here, on September 24th, the Maricopa Association of Governments submitted adequate evidence demonstrating that the area would have otherwise attained federal air quality standards by the statutory deadline. Today's determination marks the first time EPA has issued 179B authority since Administrator Zeldin rescinded the burdensome guidance. 179B guidance. So what are the numbers? EPA established a national air quality standard in 2015 of ozone at 70 parts per billion. That's with a B. To protect public health and the environment, the Phoenix Mesa area is designated non-attainment for this standard and had a moderate attainment date of August 3rd, 2024. Interesting. So that's all we got for tonight, and I am going to... say, I don't know We have some stuff going on this week. I don't know whether or not I'll be on the air tomorrow or Thursday. If I can't make it tomorrow and Thursday, we're going to try to do a weekend program here. And for Safety FM and the Safety Wars and the Safety FM Network, this is Jim Pozel signing off. Good night, and please be safe. And let's remember, don't do anything stupid this weekend.
The views and opinions expressed on this podcast are those of the host and its guest and do not necessarily reflect the official policy or position of the company. Examples of analysis discussed within this podcast are only examples. They should not be utilized in the real world as the only solution available, as they are based only on very limited and dated open source information. Assumptions made within this analysis are not reflective of the position of the company. No part of this podcast may be reproduced, stored in a retrieval system, or transmitted in any form or by any means, mechanical, electronic, recording, or otherwise, without prior written permission of the creator of the podcast, Jay Allen.
Curiosity's embrace, adjust and shift at our own pace.
You got into the safety business because you wanted to protect people. But somewhere along the way, the job started controlling your time, your schedule, your priorities, even your income potential. What if the expertise you've built over the years in the field can give you something more? More freedom, more control, more ownership of your future. I'm Sheldon Primus, the author of 7 Steps to Starting a Profitable Safety Consulting Business and the host of the Safety Consultant Podcast. With more than 350 episodes helping safety professionals become consultants and grow their career. Consulting changed my life. In fact, I'm a full-time RVer and one consulting contract paid for my home I live in today. Now, I help safety professionals build their own consulting practice through bi-weekly coaching calls, accountability, and personal guidance. But this program isn't for everyone. Start with the consultant readiness audit at sheldon.coach.
What if everything we thought we knew about safety was just interference? From the host of the Rated R Safety Show and the founder of Safety FM comes the complete Signal Transmission Trilogy, now available in one powerful edition. Safety, in my opinion, the book that started the conversation. Safety Mutation, where the boundaries of culture, systems, and belief begin to break. And now, Safety Transmission, the final piece of the Signal. For the first time, all 3 books are together in one volume. The Signal Transmission Trilogy, complete edition. This isn't just about compliance. It's about consciousness. It's about decoding the way we think, lead, and live, inside and outside the system. Whether you've been following the Signal since the beginning or you're just now tuning in, this is the version to own. Search Signal Trilogy on Amazon or visit safetyfm.com to get your copy now.